Welcome to Managing Uncertainty, a podcast series from the experts at BrightPath discussing global risk, business continuity, and crisis management. Will you be ready to lead your organization through its critical moment?
So the bad thing has happened. The boom has happened.
What do we do now?
We're on the right side of the boom.
Yeah.
We're responding. We've activated our crisis process. We've realized that we've got a facility or two that has impact.
Mm-hmm. For whatever reason.
And now we're activating business continuity plans for critical teams that are in those facilities. And we run into the problem of alternate workspace.
Yeah. And we may have planned for this or we may not have planned for this.
We hope that we have a plan for this.
Well, I always like it when you discussed your story about what had happened with the flooding, where individuals lost their workspace because of flooding. Because oftentimes we think about this like the tornado blew the building over, but it's not
That. We always seem to think of the catastrophic situation, but I think we related previously on the podcast many years ago. Employer of mine at the time, 50-story skyscraper building in Minneapolis where we occupied 40-ish floors of the building. There was a flood inside the building, and the flood was caused by a 1-inch water line running to an ice maker that had a filter change on a Friday or Thursday, and by Saturday night it was leaking, and by Sunday afternoon had proceeded to flood, I believe it was 3.5 floors of the building. And so now we had 600-ish, 800-ish employees that coming into work and couldn't work because there was 3 to 4 inches of standing water in their offices and cubicles and kind of common workspace.
Or they couldn't work in that space.
Right. That's correct. Important distinction. Right. So this is where this whole idea of alternate workspace comes up is if they can't work there, then where can they work?
Right.
So how do we solve that problem?
Yep.
We build a second building that just sits empty. And when you have disruption, you just move people to your other $250 million skyscraper, right? Mm-hmm. That's how this works.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we've seen this come up in even less drastic situations like that. And it's become more and more common to work elsewhere when there's a snowstorm and I can't get to work. Or the transportation that the company has provided for me to get to work is not running because there's a massive snowstorm, things like that. And I have to come up with an alternate plan as to where I can work.
I made a joke earlier about the secondary $250 million skyscraper. So that was just to be clear, that was a joke.
Right.
Because we kind of just moved on quickly from there.
We did, yes.
But this really starts with, when we're talking about alternate workspace, what we're really talking about here is if your primary workplace is not usable, where can you go and work? Mm-hmm. And we very rapidly come to another fork in the discussion, which is, well, is there anything special about your workspace that really has to be there for you to be able to do your job? I don't mean do your job in comfort and luxury that you might have had in your previous, your normal workspace, but like, what do you really need to do your job? I was always in jobs that I could really work from anywhere. What I needed was I need a phone, I need a computer, I need internet connectivity, I need my computer's basic set of apps, Microsoft Office and access to the web and Slack and Instant Messenger or whatever. But I didn't really need anything special to be able to do my job.
Right. But there certainly are positions that require specific tools, specific locations, specific things in order to do your job there.
Right. So if you work in a contact center,
for instance,
for any of the contact center disciplines, collection, customer service, outbound sales calls, et cetera, well, there's some pretty specialized stuff going on there. You've got a computer with certain software. You probably have a soft phone or a VoIP phone that connects to the computer and gets information from it. You probably have a dialing system and the calls are recorded. Some of this, you could probably live without. Some of this is required by regulation and you're screwed. You're going to have it in order to continue that operation.
Right.
But in almost every case, you're not going to be able to do this from home.
Right.
Although we are finally starting to see some cloud solutions come out for this sort of thing.
Yeah. And we're, of course, not talking about things like doctors and nurses in a hospital setting that clearly need to be there in order to do their job.
Right.
We're talking about other positions that can be done elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Right.
So as we start to dig into this, there's certainly as you start to devise an alternate workspace strategy, this really starts off with data. You know, in your in what's likely your business continuity life cycle, your planning process. You're asking questions about facilities, application, technology requirements, specific workspace needs like dialing software, exam tables for a doctor,
sure.
You know.
And even those in some cases can be moved elsewhere for a temporary period of time.
That's right. There's a lot you could do with a wireless laptop and a stethoscope and some basic metal equipment.
Sure.
But you probably don't want to be doing that, you know, out in the middle of the parking lot.
Right.
But
so you come up with a plan for that. But yes, you're right. So you start with the data.
So you're capturing a lot of this data.
Right. And I think this is an interesting point about the sort of the story that you told in introducing this is that BIA data should point towards specific individuals that need a specific workspace. But in that case, that was not the case, right? So many of those individuals were not on the BIA as critical employees in a certain location, that kind of thing, but they were still displaced.
Right. In the particular, in the example, we were talking about the flooding in the skyscraper. Very few of those 800 individuals and the four or five teams that they were a part of were really critical, were performing critical roles, because through our process in the business impact analysis and understanding criticality, they didn't meet our criteria.
Right.
So they therefore did not have allocated alternate workspace, which was the defined strategy that we had. In fact, they didn't have plans at all, because they were not considered to be critical processes until the Monday following the until Monday, when we had a discussion with their leaders and we were quickly corrected of, well, I don't really care what the BIA says. Maybe we filled it out wrong or whatever, but now they're critical, so they need a space to work.
Yeah.
So okay, fine.
Being prepared for that as well, that
right.
part of it.
Right.
Or being prepared to have that discussion with your leadership.
Right.
On the spot.
So as you're thinking about devising alternate workspace strategies, I think, you know, we talked about dealing with the data. I think really kind of analyzing this data and being a little challenging about why people need alternate workspace, because most companies in today's day and age don't keep a spare building around and probably don't have a whole lot of space to be able to consolidate folks. So first, I think you want to start with, let's get this list down to what actually needs alternate workspace. Who has to have a physical place to work? If they can work remotely, then have them work remotely. Until you get through that first 2, 3, 4 weeks of response, and you and your facilities partners come up with what's the long term answer going to be for how we deal with the loss of this loss or damage to this facility,
or if those positions aren't immediately critical, they can be put on hold for a period of time too.
Right.
But really coming up with clear data on exactly what that looks like for how many people and what the workspaces may look like.
Mm-hmm.
And having all of that information to be able to discuss with the people writing the checks, right? So you're who's paying the bills here?
Not going to be me.
Not going to be me. That's going to be a tough discussion, though, I think.
It is. I think this is actually a really difficult This is a really difficult thing to work through, because if you've not done this before and your company is of any size whatsoever, this can be a pretty expensive proposition. I know as we've worked with clients, we've done a number of things around alternate workspace. We've seen conference rooms wired with additional Ethernet jacks and, you know, space for people to work. We've seen common areas, furniture removed, tables and chairs installed so that folks can work. We've seen cafeterias where we've pre-wired with network and phone power so that you bring it down from the ceiling, or you pull up tiles on the floor and there's the connectivity you need to relocate contact centers and kind of critical pieces like that. So there's a lot of ways that you can approach this. We have a client that is literally building a compound where they're able to bring in, you know, vendor-provided trailers for temporary workspace, and they're wiring it with fiber and power and a bathroom setup and everything that they feel like is necessary in order to provide, even in the alternate situation, the workspace environment that they seek to have for employees.
And they have the real estate to do that. They're
correct. But even this is still a significant project for them.
Absolutely.
To undertake.
Yeah.
But, you know, in all of these efforts, we've seen success where companies have taken the time to really do a thorough analysis of, let's get down to who really has to have space. Let's make a good analysis of what we're going to need to fulfill those issues if these are disrupted. And then what are the different options that we can go through in order to get to the best possible answer? and then bring those options to your executives, your governance structure, or what have you, in order to talk through those.
Yep, and I think that's really the best way to be prepared for those discussions with your senior leaders, is to having all of the data and also having the financial information up front. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be very costly,
right?
But having all of that information and being able to provide the financial considerations around that, and also what the financial considerations could potentially look like without that if something were to happen.
Right. It's important to look at other options too, like hotels and hotel conference rooms. If you've got people that can work using a laptop and VPN, and all they need is Wi-Fi, you do a lot in a 600-person banquet room. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to pretend it's going to be cozy and that you're all going to be kind of singing Kumbaya together, but you got a place to go. There's bathrooms that's dry, or you know, it's warm or chilled, depending upon what climate you're in.
Right.
That might be a better option than having people, outside in trailers for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. So additionally, in this, we can't really have this discussion without going back to the remote work discussion, or the working from home discussion, or however you want to look at that. Because in some cultures, it's absolutely normal. So for instance, at BrightPath here, we work elsewhere all the time.
Can't remember the last time I saw Jen in person.
I'm here now. but even you, Brian, we work from all over the place.
We
really
do.
We travel a lot. We work from all over the world. And we don't need any special equipment to do that, but we do need our laptop, our yep. internet, our VPN, mm-hmm. our access to our applications and things like that. So it's normal in our culture to operate this way.
But we work with companies who remote work is foreign to them.
Right. So introducing, or potentially introducing, that as a normal way to operate.
Definitely an area of challenge.
It can be an area of challenge, yes. Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely worth talking through. I mean, if remote work is not part of your organization's culture, and you're going to use remote work to instead as a alternate workspace strategy, or most of the time you're going to go to remote work before you go to alternate workspace, because right. it is cheaper, it's faster to execute, and in many ways it works just as well. And if that's not part of your culture, that's going to be a real adjustment for folks. If the only way that your team, for example, knows how to collaborate is to do it in person across a table, or by talking across cubicles or offices or whatever, and all of a sudden they're all working from their own homes, that collaboration is not going to come easy to them. You're going to have to really work at it to make that work.
And that said, it would be, as if that is part of your strategy, then that's something you want to start testing and working on. So whether that be testing your VPN limits or working occasionally on a remote basis to practice that collaborative work from elsewhere.
Right. We do think that remote work is something that's overlooked a lot in alternate workspace strategies. So certainly something that you want to look at and dig into as you're devising your own strategy, and certainly not be afraid to challenge the current status quo. Because we think it's better to take on the remote work challenge and challenge the culture, if your company really doesn't support such a thing, than to go invest hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars in an alternate workspace strategy that could really be replaced by letting, 70, 80 people work from home during a disruption.
Yeah, and I think that another important part to think about through that, if you're going to use remote work, is understanding that, like you said earlier, it's cheaper and faster. And if your employees can't get to an office for whatever reason, being a natural disaster or something like that, but they're already at home, it's safer for them to stay at home and continue working.
That's right.
So there's really some advantages of allowing that remote work culture.
To recap then on the alternate workspace discussion for today, understand the situation, understand the data, particularly from your BIA or business continuity lifecycle, give it a thorough analysis, be challenging on departments and teams and their thoughts on alternate workspace, and get them down to what they truly need to have in the event of a major disruption. Pull together some options to discuss with your governance committee or your senior executives to work through the problem, and then put a solid plan in place and think about the different options, including remote work, as a successful way to manage these kind of situations, as opposed to standing up alternate facilities.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Managing Uncertainty, produced by the experts at BrightPath. To receive notifications of new episodes, join our newsletter at brightpath.com or subscribe to your favorite podcast player, such as iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about the services and trusted advice from BrightPath by visiting brightpath.com. That's BrightPath.com.